We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Esports Biz Show. I'm your host, Justin Jacobson. This week we'll be discussing esports shoutcasters and hosts. Just a disclaimer, nothing here is intended as legal advice, so all the information is for educational purposes only. This week's guest is Mike Navarro. He's a veteran esports caster and analyst, including working extensively with PUBG, as well as the current director of esports at Harrisburg University. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So to start, let's discuss your past esports and gaming experience. What was the first game you played, and how'd you first get involved in the business?
Oh man, so this is I have one of those stories that I feel like a lot of kids, like nerdy kids my age, might have had, where I was super into video games. My grandmother got me an NES system when I was like 8 years old for my birthday, and my parents wouldn't let me have it. They were so intent on me doing well in school, and they saw it and they were like, no, that's going to be a distraction from your studies. Yeah, we don't want you to play video games, all that stuff. You play your normal sports anyway, so that's all the time you need. So I was like, from that point on, I was like, oh man, like this thing is being kept from me. I want it more than anything.
Right.
So like I would go over to friends' houses and, you know, we'd be playing Genesis and different NES games. So like, I'm old school. We had the original consoles, and then they also had arcades at the time, back in the malls and stuff. So we would go out there on the weekends, and everybody would be out there playing like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. And I was always terrible at it, but that was where I was kind of like my first experience with competitive video gaming, really.
Right. It's like one of those things where it's like you want it more because you don't have it. And it's like this thing that's like, oh, whoa, like, why do they not want me to have it?
Exactly. It's the forbidden fruit, man. Everybody knows. So there's probably a few other forbidden fruits throughout my high school days, but that was as far as the ones that are relevant to my
podcast.
Yeah. The ones that are relevant to my my career, at least, that was probably the most important one.
So how did you first kind of get involved in the esports space?
So and as soon as I graduated high school, I immediately went into the workforce, right? I started working warehouse jobs. I was trying to, you know, anything I could do to move out of my parents' house and kind of get off and be my own adult and all that stuff. And I thought it was going to be great. Didn't realize how much it sucked, but that's
bills are so fun.
You don't really think about that when you're 18. But I worked and I was doing warehouses, inventory management, you know, all kind of blue collar jobs like that. And then 2008 hit and the recession kind of hit, and then all of a sudden the job started drying up. So I started thinking about, okay, well, what can I do that, you know, I never have to worry about this again? And so I thought that my answer was to go back to community college and take classes for nursing. And I was like, look, nursing, it's a job path that's always going to have stuff available. So I started going for that. And lo and behold, the C student from high school at 29, all of a sudden was really, really good at school. And I was getting A's and it was just easy and everything was interesting. Everything was super, I was super motivated to do well. And it was like I was into it again. And so, I worked my way through, my associates. And then I had an advisor that worked with me at the time that said, hey, you know, you've got a really good GPA. You know, you're a non-traditional student. You're, you know, the exact kind of thing that a lot of four-year universities would love to take on. And there's a pretty good chance that you could do it and not have to pay for it either. And so, you know, I applied to several different universities, and I was blessed, and I got accepted to Cornell University, which is a school that, you know, I'd never thought that I could be able to get into. But that was also me now having to quit working full time for the first time in like 10 years and really make that plunge. So, and then traveling halfway across the country to an area of the country I'd never lived in before and had no, you know, I had one friend that was there, but I'm going as a, you know, a 29, 30 year old student. Like, I'm not going to be hanging out at the frats, you know, parties. I'm not going to be doing it. So I had nothing to do with my time. I don't want to be the creepy old guy that just like infringes on everybody. So, so I started really kind of getting into, Overwatch, which had just released at the time. And I was playing with my friends back home. Cause like, that was kind of the way that I could still like Friday night, I'm, you know, wanting to do something, but I don't have anybody to do it with. So I hook up with them, and just as out of like nowhere, one of my buddies was like, hey, there's this Overwatch competitive league, this like grassroots thing that's starting up. And they said that they're looking for casters. Would you want to do something like that? And at that point, like I'd gotten into some like StarCraft esports. And so I was well aware of what esports was. I was starting to get into League of Legends esports at the time too. And so I was like, you know, I could definitely do that. Like, I love getting in front of the camera and talking. Like, it doesn't bother me for whatever reason. It's never been something that's been an issue. So I was like, sure, you know, let's do it. And so we started doing casting for competitive Overwatch League, or COW League, which some of the really, really old school Overwatch people should remember that. That was like, I think the very first grassroots league in North America, at least one of the bigger ones. And so me and my buddy, you know, kind of worked doing that. And I was doing just play by play and color and analyst and all that stuff and just having fun with it. And then, you know, eventually I kind of got bored of the game. It was not changing up a whole lot. And then, you know, I graduated with my undergrad and moved on to grad school, to a different college at LSU. And the situation kind of remained the same, right? Like, I was still the older guy there, and, you know,
gentleman in the back row.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we found out that we, like, you know, me and my friend, we really, really enjoyed it. My friend, got a guy named Matrim, who is also a PUBG caster to this day. And we got into PUBG, about 2 weeks after early access, release. And then about a couple of weeks after that, he found the grassroots league that was starting up, and we're like, 100% want to do this. Like, I think it's the most interesting esport ever, from, you know, a variety of different angles, you know, 16 different teams, 64 different players, storylines all over the place, tons and tons of strategy. Like, there's just a never ending well of things to talk about. And so that's kind of how I got into it. It was just kind of a way to keep myself busy while and hanging out with my friends from back home while all this was going on, where all my studies were going on.
Amazing. I think it's so interesting that, like, it just, you didn't look for it. You weren't like, oh, I want to be a caster. It's like, you just kind of found something that you liked and gravitated towards it, and, you know, kind of got on this voyage. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the standout moments, you know, in your casting career, some stuff that really kind of like stands out to you.
There are, it's cheesy to say, but almost every moment is a standout moment, because it's not something that I ever saw myself doing or being able to do, right? Like, I've always been a traditional sports fan, every sport, basketball. I mean, I'm hooked onto everything. Like, after this, I'll probably go watch basketball and look up stats and stuff. But like, I've always been that guy. And so when esports came and I just kind of really sank my teeth into it, you know, it was, I never looked at it as something that could possibly be a job, because I think I still had that old school mentality of, it's video games, right? And I didn't realize like the industry about it. So this was just always going to be a hobby. And it was always going to be the thing that was fun until I started getting paid for it. And then it got cool. But like, man, I over the years, you know, a few moments definitely stick out. And obviously the first LAN that I ever got invited to work at was a huge one. And I'll never forget. It was PGL. Which I didn't know anything about at the time.
It's a big one for those who aren't familiar.
To find out, it's a very, very big TO, and especially with Dota and stuff like that. And so they hosted an event in Bucharest, obviously not somewhere that I ever would have imagined myself
or even
visiting.
Know where he's on the map, right?
Yeah, I was like, I had to definitely look it up. Like, I'd heard of Bucharest before, but I didn't know exactly like where it was. But and so we got to go out there, and you know, I got to meet all the players, I got to meet all the other talent, and it's like, you know, after talking about all these guys for I think at that point like a year and a half maybe, you know, I got to actually meet them in person and kind of put names to faces. And so that was a really cool time, and some of the other casters also were like people that had been around for a while, and you know that I got to finally meet that I had, you know, learned about from other esports and watching other esports, and then meeting them, and it was a little bit of like hero worship there for at least the first 5 minutes or so, until they start ribbing on you, and you get to have that kind of personal relationship. Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. Like the funniest thing was like, I've had that, those people come up that, you know, we're just have just been like big PUBG fans for a long time or whatever. And I'll go up to, and they'll come up to me like, oh my God, Poro. Like, I'm like, whoa, calm down, dude. Like, let's just go get a beer. Like,
just a guy.
Yeah. I'm just as surprised I'm here as you are. But, and I've always kind of taken, like, tried to do whatever I could to hold on to that, like, initial just joy that you get out of it, because it's very easy to get caught up in all like the negativity and all that stuff, and like in doomerism and, you know, competition when it comes to casting jobs and doing all that stuff. Like, I've never wanted to be a part of that or get into that. Like, I've always wanted to make sure that this is something that I still enjoy today as much as I did the first time I did it, whenever I was never planning on making money off of it. You know, it's that whole like stupid thing that everybody said, that if you do something that you love, you never work a day in your life. Well, it's actually kind of true sometimes, and I hate admitting it because it's like the most boomer saying ever, but like it is what it is. Like, I every time I go to a LAN, or every time I even sit down online to cast, like, I'm legitimately having fun. Like, I'm not, if I sound like I'm smiling, it's not fake. Like, I'm actually enjoying this as much as it seems like it.
Amazing. Well, that, you know, that's the best part of it. So what was it like kind of casting these large tournaments, like, you know, a global championship?
Man, you talk about like the big moments that always stick with you. Right. And, obviously, every time I get to go to one of these global championships, I'm just like blown over by how much work and how much effort goes into putting on these shows, and then just getting to be a part of that. So far, you know, pretty much every year at this point, I've gotten to do the global championships every year, and then, you know, stuff that, like, it was a bucket list dream that I never thought would be possible whenever I first started casting. Whenever I was first sitting there watching StarCraft 2, was one day maybe I'll cast a game in Korea. Like, that would be sick. And I got to do it like 2 years after I had the bucket list dream. I'm like, that was like the fastest dream completion. Like, I speed ran that. And I got to I actually got to cast in an arena, in a live venue in Korea,
and like the home of esports,
and it was just unreal. Like, I, like, every now and then, like, you like ask any of the people that I cast with for PUBG, I'm like, where we'll be like sitting on a, like, for this last PUBG global championship, we're in Bangkok, It's me and Toffees and Matrum, some of the other talent, and we're walking around this mall in Bangkok, and there's like a Muay Thai fight that's about to start. We're sitting there, they go into these night markets and eating fruit, and I'm just like looking at these other two, and I'm like, guys, like, who would have ever thought like we would be doing this with our life? Like, you know, sometimes I guess, you know, since I'm getting a little bit older, it's easier to fall into that like self-reflection time a little bit. But I'd never want to take this stuff for granted.
I think that's amazing, and definitely being able to go to different countries and to do these events of the scale and the production and the excitement of the fans and just everything awesome about it is just, you know, online is great, but the in-person is just, you know, it's entertainment at its finest, right?
Yeah. I mean, no matter, casters try their hardest, right, at everything. And I don't care, like, even the best casters will tell you, like, it doesn't matter how hard you try doing online casting for online events, it's never going to compare. You're never going to get that same energy just through the voice that you get from being in that live environment. It's a completely different animal, and you find just like it's just impossible to replicate, really, when from sitting at a chair in your house, you know?
Absolutely. So what is something you kind of realized, you know, while you started the casting that you really didn't maybe know before, you know, something you kind of learned that you weren't, you know, expecting or.
Well, that you could get paid for this, number one, first and foremost. and I think one of the things, and this may be a little bit more just retrospective of me and from being with this scene in particular, the PUBG scene, since it's basically its infancy, was that you end up watching these players grow up. And it's crazy. Like I remember, you know, talking about, you know, this, oh my God, this 17-year-old phenom, he's insane. Like he's gonna be like, we're so excited to see him finally get to play. And then now, like years later, like he's married and they're having babies, and I'm like, what the hell? Like it's so cool to see, and it's not something that I ever hear talked about too much either, which is crazy because I guess it's because maybe not everybody's been there, but seeing it just how it grew from what it was when we first started, and we were the ones kind of deciding what the rule set was going to be with, you know, the players and how the points system and how the esport was going to look, and going from that to where we are now and seeing, you know, the kids that we started off with are now grown adults. And, you know, we've developed these friendships over the years that are, you know, beyond esports. It's just, that's something that I just never really anticipated or expected.
Definitely. I think that's one of the unique things. So, you know, you've obviously been in the industry a long time, and you've encountered and worked with, you know, different agents and managers and attorneys and different representatives. So what advice do you have for, you know, aspiring casters and just people and talent that are, you know, embarking on this, potentially working with, you know, agents and managers and these other people?
I would say most importantly is, have a very good understanding of what you want out of that relationship, and have a very good understanding of what that particular support staff is going to provide for you, exactly what it is. Just know going in, because it's, I think I've made the mistake in the past where I was expecting one thing, and then what we ended up receiving on the end was something completely different. But that was what it was always going to be at the time, right? So, like, it's understanding exactly what it is, what each role is going to be, so that you're never surprised, you never, you know, you don't end up, you know, resenting or thinking that you're being taken advantage of, because it was never the case. It was just not what we had signed up for. So, and never feel like you're going to be a burden, I think is the other thing. Just understand that the people that you're working with there are intended, like that's their whole purpose, is to support you and help you out. So if you have questions, if you have comments or anything, just never feel like you're a burden to reach out, because that's something that I'm very bad about. I don't like bothering people unless it's something that I feel like is absolutely necessary. And I feel like I could have developed a lot better relationships with people in the past if I just would have been not worried about being a burden, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those things where sometimes you have to realize, like you said, the extent of the relationship, what it's going to be, and know what it's going to be. And if that's not what you need, you know, not every situation is what you need and not the best for you. And being able to navigate that and identify that is a hard thing, right? Because sometimes you see, all the flashing lights and all the other people and what they're doing. And it's, and it's hard that, you know, maybe they can do that for one player or one, you know, talent, one caster. That doesn't necessarily mean they can do it for you, or they can do it for everybody, or that they're going to do it for you.
I think that there's also a misconception a lot of times that that if you don't have a agent, or if you don't have a particular agent, then you're not going to get a job. I don't think that's always the case. I think that there's probably some stuff maybe that's the case where it's like, you know, big writ large, but you know, like, or like white label events where, you know, the agency has a relationship with the white label event producer, stuff like that. But you know, there was a lot of times where when we were represented, as a lot of us casters were represented by the same agency, where I was seeing people say like, oh, well, since I'm not represented by that agency, I'm not going to get the job. Well, it's not always the case. It's not always true. You know, there's, you know, different people in PUBG are represented by different agencies. A lot of them are independent. There's some guys that have worked every single PUBG international event that have never been represented by an agent. They've always been individually represented, and they've still always gotten the job. So, you know, if you want to do it, like you said, there's a lot of good reasons to have representation, but you just got to know exactly what it is that you're wanting to get out of it.
Definitely. I think everyone take note of that. People that are doing big stuff, you know, they're able to do it on their own. You have the right advisors, the right people who can, you know, whether it's just negotiate the deals or help you facilitate and, you know, find things. It's, you know, not always one size fits all. So in addition to being a professional caster, you're actually, you know, the director of esports at Harrisburg University. So
yes,
you know, tell us a little about that role and, you know, what are some of your responsibilities?
So, just hitting 1 year. So I'm still relatively new to the position. So it's still learning stuff every single day. But, so I am basically overseeing three head coaches for three different sports: Valorant, Rocket League, and League of Legends, and also I have an assistant director that works with the partnerships side, so of esports partnerships. So somebody who's kind of working with the university to kind of get us people that we can work with, essentially, and outreach stuff. So my role is kind of overseeing all of their stuff, and just making sure that they have everything they need. The coaches have everything they need, to be able to run the teams, that the players have everything they need, that all their needs are met. And then also just being an advocate for, not only the esports team, but also the university as a whole. And one of the things that we're really doubling down on trying to do now is doing, you know, three different levels of outreach, essentially, where we are trying to reach out into our local community in the city, working with the high schools, middle schools, and just, you know, talking with the students, more importantly, talking with the parents and kind of educating them about what esports can really do for their children, as far as, you know, the future is concerned, and you know, from the academic standpoint, and then starting to reach out regionally as well. So, you know, we've gone to high school tournaments in Washington, D.C. We have relationships with people in New Jersey as well, starting to look in New York, you know, just trying to basically look, and in Pennsylvania as well, obviously. But just looking, you know, making it so that esports players in these, specifically in this region, know that Harrisburg University has an esports team, that we have the esports management program, that we have all this stuff that's available to them should they want it, should they be interested.
So yeah, so let's kind of talk about that esports management program. You know, I know sure. They have some really unique classes there and some wonderful faculty, you know, for disclosure, I'm one of those wonderful faculty
one of them,
members.
Yes.
So I do have firsthand knowledge that there's some unique classes. So are you involved in the academics at all?
I am, actually. For this semester, I am teaching a special topics class in casting. So I have a very small class, but we're basically learning all about play-by-play, color casting, analysts, anything in front of the camera, essentially. We're learning about, and we're, you know, getting them practice doing some casting and seeing what it's like finding their voice, and, you know, not getting too detailed just yet, but just getting that experience of what it's like and to see if it's something that they may enjoy. And in the future, you know, for when you get the people that really, really want to do it and really want to take it to that next level, I'm putting together another class as well, which is more of an advanced casting thing. But one of the really cool things that Harrisburg does is that we have the esports management program, but we also have numerous events throughout the year. Right now, two, looking at hopefully making it three very soon, LANs that we host at the university every year. So, and those are all switching over to being completely student run, with obviously faculty and esports, assistants. But, so it's getting that, it's not only getting that, that education and learning from people that have firsthand industry knowledge and experience, but it's also getting to take that knowledge then and use it in a hands-on way for two major LANs that we put on, you know, QFest in the fall. I think we had about 300 people overall across, like, I think 16 or 17 different colleges that came in to compete. And then PA Cup, which is in the spring, which is what they're getting ready for right now, is inviting all these local high schools to come in. So it's two distinct, and hopefully soon will be a third one, where if you want to get casting experience for a live event, you can do that. You get production experience, you get experience what it is like to actually set up a LAN, how long, you know, all the people that you have to talk to, all the things that you go into it, and it is a lot of stuff. So
amazing. I think those are probably the best kind of courses where you're able to kind of do it, really experience it, and then see it happen in front of you, right?
Exactly.
It's one thing to, you know, submit a proposal for an event or a marketing budget, but to actually use that budget and to see that event and to see the flyer and, you know, the lights go on and the show starts and, you know, it's game time.
And most importantly is you get to see where what mistakes you made, right? You get to see how it's playing out in person. You get to see how the players are reacting to everything. How are they enjoying it? Are there stuff that we needed to fix? Is there stuff that we didn't think about that maybe we should have thought about? Like, for example, we had for last QFest, we had a complete setup of all these tables, didn't take into account that there was a window where the sun shone directly through at this particular time of the day, and the players were facing that direction and they're trying to play their games and they've got the sun just glaring right in their eyes. And it's like, it's stuff like that, like, you know, until you actually, you know, see it in person, that's you may not think about it. So you know, that at the end of the day, that's kind of what we're trying to do. You can prepare as much as possible, but you don't really start learning until you've had to do that troubleshooting on the spot and see those the stuff that comes up, and then look at the whole entirety of the event after the fact and think about things that could have been improved going forward. And so since we have two of these events every year, and we do it every year, if you get involved with one year, you can then be involved in the next one the next semester. You can then be involved in the one after that. So it's like you're gaining more and more experience as you go, and you get to actually act on the things that you've learned the from the past ones, right? So, and if there's, if you feel like you know it perfectly, then you can move into a different aspect of it, right? So if you if you think that you've got everything as far as venue set up and all that stuff, maybe now you want to get into the stream production side and learn what that's like. So a lot of different options, a lot of different ways to go about doing it, but it's I think it's an awesome learning experience, and it's it's relatively pain-free. It's safe. In a safe environment.
Yes, right. You're not streaming it to hundreds of thousands of people with sponsors paying a lot of money for that.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about losing your job if things go wrong.
Amazing. So are you kind of involved in the recruiting process? And what is that kind of like, this transition finding players to compete?
So we as far as the actual recruiting process, I don't really start coming in until the very end. We've got fantastic coaches that have, lots, years and years of industry experience at both, professional level and collegiate level. These guys have their, obviously every different sport has its different pathways, right? Communication channels, scrim discords, pro discords. It's very much a, who do you know kind of thing. And, we have some coaches that are really, really knowledgeable in how to get kind of out in there and start putting out feelers and talking to people. I start getting involved whenever they decide that they want to come. And that's when we start looking at, okay, scholarship funding, housing, what the team's going to look like, what their schedules are going to look like, how do we get with them with admissions, and just all that stuff. So I'm kind of there to walk them through the process that any normal student would go through, just to be there, to be that person to kind of answer questions for not only the student, but for the parents as well.
Amazing. I think that's, so unique. So let's talk a little about this path to pro. I know kind of right now, the esports path to pro doesn't really kind of go through college the way most other traditional sports, obviously basketball and football and, baseball kind of has its diagonal, but for all intents and purposes, most players are going to go to college in most sports, right?
Sure.
So obviously that's not the case in esports. Is that something you see coming? Is that something we need?
Well, it's hard to predict, right? Like, it's from one hand, you look at when most players competitively are at their peaks, right? For esports, I mean, your fast twitch games, stuff like that, you're probably going to be at your peak around that, 15, 16, 17 age range, where that's where, you're looking to probably try to go pro. If you are going to go pro, that's where you're going to do it. Right. And that's where you're going to get the interest from major orgs. And there's nothing wrong with that. Right. Like that, if you're able to kind of hit at that level, then congratulations, you are one of the unicorns. You are one of the lucky 1% or probably less than 1%, that are going to be not only good enough, but also have the right contacts and have the good fortune of being signed on to play at a professional level for some amount of time. I think it definitely varies by game, right? Because I think whereas a lot of people in say something like Valorant, you peak very young. I think with stuff like League of Legends, stuff that's a little bit more less fast twitch muscle, more critical thinking kind of stuff, I think maybe you peak a little bit later, early 20s. So it's really a question of if you're a player, what do you want to get out of your playing, right? Like, there's obviously that less than 1% chance that you're gonna get the bag, which I'm sorry, guys, the bag isn't there as much as it used to be. And if it is, it's not much. Or can you get something that's just tangible that you're going to have for the rest of your life in the term of a college degree, right? And have it completely paid for. So, you know, I think that, kids end up, you know, having to make a lot of really important decisions. And at the end of the day, I'm the guy that went back to school when I was 29. So my thing is, take your time. If you have the ability to take your time, take your time. And really make sure that once you get to, once you make the decision to go to school, that that's something that you want to see through, and stay for all 4 years and graduate. And then once you graduate, you know, you have multiple options. Give yourself as many options as possible. Once you graduate, you're still going to be early 20s. You're still probably going to be good at the game, right? You're still probably going to, and not only that, you're probably going to have a lot bigger of a network that you, of players that you know that you could want to play with and try out and maybe do open quals with, and stuff like that. So now if it doesn't work out, you've got a degree sitting there too. So you can go out and try to get work off of that. So, you know, it's never give up the dream, always chase the dream, but do it in such a way where you're covering your own ass.
Right. You got to have options to protect the downside.
Exactly. Exactly. And the number of universities that are offering, you know, even just partial scholarships at this point to play is growing by the semester even. I mean, it's you know, what was available a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, it's almost doubled or tripled in size at this point, right? And, you know, the one thing I would say about that is do your research, right? Obviously know, look into what the program that you're interested in looks like and who's in charge of it, who's running it. Talk to some of the other players that are in that program, see what they think. And just get all the information that you can before making a final decision. But again, that's just you have time. You have time, unless you have, you know, folks that are, you know, hitting the watch every time you step out of your room.
Definitely, I think that's some great advice, and we're going to see how it evolves, right? I think that, as you mentioned, your optimal age is a little bit younger than maybe, you know, a football player, basketball player, right? You don't maybe hit your growth spurt till you're, you know, 18, 19 years old sometimes, right? Like You sometimes see, what was it? Kevin Durant was like short freshman year, and by freshman year in college, he's 7, however, and like, you know.
Well, look at LeBron now versus LeBron year one. I mean, that man put on about like 90 pounds of pure muscle. Right. Like, and even the difference between year one and year three. And that's just growing up. And, you know, obviously that's LeBron is like a freak of nature, right? Like it's hard to compare, probably one of the greatest athletes we've ever seen, but you know, it's the difference, right, between, you know, the more traditional sports where you've got to have that physical, you know, where you've got to kind of grow into where everybody else is in the sport to where we are in esports, where like, if you're 15, 16, you're a senior in high school, or you're 17, about to turn 18 and about to, you know, be eligible to compete. If you'll know, right. You'll know if there's interest in you because people will be contacting you and they'll be putting off offers to you. You'll have more than one, right. You'll have three or four that you'll have to choose from. Any less than that, like it's, you know, you never know. You never, maybe you can put together a team of your friends and get in through open qualifiers, but how many times have y'all ever seen an open qualifier team win, you know, the top prize where you're getting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to split amongst each other to really kind of set yourself up for the next couple of years. You know, when you really, really get down to the brass tacks and look at it on paper, and see the type of money that you would be getting, and you look at it realistically, at the end of the day, having a school that's willing to pay your tuition and you know, and get you housing and get you out there and kind of take and give you something to do, for the next couple of years usually ends up being the more financially sound choice.
So we're definitely, you know, like I said, see how that continues to evolve. So What's your favorite part about casting and commentating?
Oh, man. My favorite part about casting, honestly, it's funny. You'll probably never hear anybody else say this. I like trying to get my co-caster to break. That is my goal every time I'm casting this. And it also helps that it's like, I never do it with somebody if I've never done it with them before. But like most of the casters I've been casting with them for years now, right? I am always trying to get them to laugh. If I can get a laugh out of my co-caster, then I know I'm doing something right. And I'm assuming that that chat is enjoying it as well. And I like the thought of being the voice over a player's clip that they put in a montage, right? Like one of the things that I do every now and then is I'll go back and you can go and watch these YouTube compilations of like the greatest slam dunks, like the 50 greatest slam dunks in NBA history, right? And they'll have the casters that are calling the dunks at the time. I'll go back and I'll listen to those, and I'm like, just hearing the kind of things like that kind of highlight that exclamation point that you put onto it. And in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, now this guy could go and find this play that was like absolutely disgusting. They could pull the clip. They've got my voice over the top that's going to make it look even cooler, and they share that. So like that's another thing that I really like to do is I like to kind of like think about it that way, almost in a way.
So what would you say the hardest part about it is?
Hardest part is keeping up with new, the hardest part at this point, now that I've got a full-time job on the side, is keeping up with all the other regions. And that's, you know, not necessarily something that I need to do, but it's something that I feel like I want to do. I always want to know what's going on in all the other regions, what their meta is, how that's going to look versus what we've got going on in North America or just America, the Americas in general, because we have Latin America included into the Americas now as well. So it's keeping track of like all that stuff, trying to keep track of what's going on in the Korea scene and China scene whenever their VODs are going on at like, or their games are going on at like 4 or 5 in the morning for me. Like, it's going back and kind of watching that. It's keeping up with the scene the same way I kept up with it when I started, where I was like, this was all I had to do, right? Like I didn't have anything else to do. So I could constantly just watch VODs and keep up with stuff and look at stats and build my own stat sheets and compare and see where everybody kind of fits as far as the international goes. Like I was that nerd. Like that's what I did because I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun doing it. I don't have as much time to do that anymore, but I can still go back and I can still like look at stat sheets. I can look at stat lines. I can watch VODs from time to time and see what everything's like, keep up, see where the players, what teams they're on now, what those teams are looking like and stuff like that. It's always interesting to me.
Absolutely. So what advice do you have for aspiring casters, you know, people trying to kind of jump in there?
You know, I think a lot of people will kind of give you advice for when you're maybe like 1 or 2 years in, which is, you know your worth, right? Don't do things for free if you know that you know they're getting paid to do the event, all this stuff. I want to say, like, you know, yes, obviously, you know your worth, but also know the industry, kind of understand the TOs, right? If there's a grassroots tournament, you know, it's a, like I used to do stuff for collegiate battlegrounds. They didn't have any funding. They didn't have any money for me. They barely were able to scrape up money for a prize pool for the players. Like that's more important to me, right? That the players are getting their due. I'm more than like, I can volunteer my time. I know I've got the time to spare. If I don't have the time to spare, then I won't, right? Like I won't agree to it. because I want to be sure, I want to make sure that I'm able to give them 100%, right? But I think that you'll have a lot of people that, you know, one of the things that pervades esports is that chase the bag mentality, and it's at all levels, right? It's player level, it's talent level, it's everything. But I think you have to be realistic at the same time. Like, you have to understand that a lot of these grassroots tournaments, like, they're struggling to make ends meet.
The bag,
they
want to get there.
It's, yeah, or if it is, it's a very small one. And like, there's like, I personally, I would prefer like the people that are doing the most work, right? The producers, the people that are putting all these hours and hours of work into creating graphics and doing all this. So I'd rather like, I'll sacrifice a couple of hours of my time talking so that person that put in 20 hours that was volunteering, so that they could maybe get something, right? Or at the end of the day, if it can go to the players, right? So, you know, I think that, like, if you know that you have the time and you want to see your game, you want to see that scene grow and develop and flourish, especially at a path to pro level, you know, be willing to do stuff for free, you know, be willing to kind of get in there and especially kind of hone your craft, find your voice, find, you know, what your place in the community is going to be, learn the players' names, not just their tags. You know, learn more about their stories, why they're doing what they're doing, learn the history of your sport. Just like, you know, really, really get in there and get involved, and you gotta love the scene. And in order to love the scene, you're going to be doing a lot of stuff that you're not going to be getting paid for, right? I mean, the amount of stuff I do just to prep myself for friggin' fantasy football, that is apropos of absolutely nothing except for the fact that I dig through stat sheets for hours and hours and hours on end because I enjoy it, right? I'm not expecting to get paid for it. I'm doing it because I'm enjoying it, right? So now once you get like 2-3 years on down the road and you start taking a part of these you know, big productions, lands, and stuff like that, that have obviously more money involved. That's when you can start really looking at saying, okay, know your worth, make sure, you know, talk to your other casters, talk to the other talent, find out what they're getting paid. Hey, and make sure that everybody's
copacetic. That's a tough conversation, isn't it?
And it's always so stupid to me that people want to be super secret squirrel about all this stuff. And like, that doesn't, you guys not knowing what each other are making is only helping out them, the people that are paying you. That's the only people that's helping out. So that's, you know, I got the lawyer over here. You're like, yes. It's like, it's, I guess the agent side's just like, no, you know what the going rate is. And if you can be realistic with it, if say like somebody's been casting for 3 years at the top level of this sport, and you're now in here in your first year, don't expect to get paid that same amount that they're getting, right? They've put 3 years worth of time in, but also, you know, expect to get, you don't try to undercut to the point where it's ridiculous, right? You know, I think you have to be realistic with it all.
I think that's great advice. Is, you know, you need to get this experience, you need to do it. And if you're just doing it to make money or just for the money, like, you're not probably doing it for the right reasons. And it's
100%
not, yeah, probably going to be a long-term success.
Yeah, no, you never want to do it for the money, but you also don't, you also want to present a united, maybe not a united front, but you also, you don't want other talent to start looking at you like, okay, this is the guy that's going to get work because he's undercutting what we've all worked towards, right? Mm-hmm. And whoa, word travels fast. Word, yeah, right? Travels fast, and And it will mark you for the rest of your casting career, because everybody talks, everybody listens, and the amount of crossover in esports is insane. Like, you know, you piss off somebody one day at some little grassroots tournament, and then, you know, a year down the road, that person is in charge of production for like Riot. And now what are you going to do? And I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen.
You never know who someone's going to be, right? Like, that's always the advice. Mm-hmm. You never know who someone's going to be. So be nice and cordial and professional, and approach your business that way so that no one can ever say otherwise.
Exactly. Be the person, be somebody that you would want to work with at all times, from all levels.
Right. And know that if you, you know, for worse, shit on someone on their way up, you never know where their path is going to lead. And I've seen that happen my times, you know, random person reach out to you and you're just being nice and like, okay, obviously I'll talk to you and give you a little wisdom, whatever. And they become something, whatever. And it's like, oh, like this guy was nice to me. Like he didn't need to be nice to me. He had nothing to gain from it.
Exactly.
But the same way, like you said, be someone who, you know, when I reached out to people to be like, oh, can you whatever, they gave me their time. And, you know, obviously there was nothing to gain from talking to me, but, you know, that wasn't the purpose of it.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, and it works both ways too, right? For every person that I've, like, I know stories about casters that I have never met, I've never had any interactions with in esports that I've never been interested in. And I know stories about them. But I also I know the people that people love to work with, right? Mm-hmm. I know the you hear just as much as the bad stuff. You hear the good stuff. You hear this guy is amazing. Like this lady, this woman is just like the best person that I've ever worked with in terms of like, you know, being friendly, being accessible, being into it, you know, being, you know, listening, like, and It's a small knit community, you know, like as far as professional casters go and in esports, like everybody kind of knows everybody or has heard of everybody in some sense. So, you know, if you're one of those, and nobody's got time for the diva shit, if you're one of that, that word will travel fast that's the kind of person you are. But if you're one of those people that is just a joy to be around and just a pleasure to work with, that word's going to travel fast too. So,
right. So that's the good advice for all you people out there that are trying to do this, is like, know that how you start out and how you approach people is going to have an impact. And, you know, esports or all these entertainment industries, you know, as you go up, as you're doing stuff at the highest level with the highest companies and the biggest, you know, talent, everyone starts knowing each other. Everyone talks. And, you know, whether you're an agent who's known for, you know, whatever it is, scamming your clients, or your tournament organizer known for not paying on time or not treating your players right or underpaying them. Like, there's lots of different things, and this stuff all gets around. And the flip side is if you're known for, you know, paying well, being on time, running a great show, having great staff, open to feedback, like, that's probably a place that most people want to work.
No, absolutely. I mean, if like people will fall over themselves to work. I mean, look, Riot, you know, has obviously a reputation, but everything that I've ever heard about people that have worked as talent for Riot is that is just the gold class. Like the way that they support their talent, the way once they're there, you know, and the way talent are treated and at least as far as Valorant goes, I've spoken to some League of Legends too, but I mean, I think with that, with League is a little different, because sometimes you hear one thing and then you actually see something else. So it's, but you never know. And that's the thing, is like one mistake or one decision made can alter how an entire industry views you, right? So it's not always fair. It's not always it's the way it is, right? So I think that as long as you try to always be genuine, you know, always be genuine to who you are. Always be in it for the right reasons. Like you said, if you're in it for just the money, that's not, you know, that's not the right reasons, obviously. Like, be in it for the growth. Like, you know, do what you, you know, how, whatever that means to you, however you want to go about doing that. But, yeah, man, I think everybody that's in this at this point, that's been in it for a while now, you know, we kind of look at it. We kind of like are very, very, possessive of how things are. Like, we don't want to see it. This thing has been built up for a couple of decades now. I came in, you know, fairly early, but not by any means the earliest. And like, I don't want to let down the people that came before me. And I don't want the new people to come in, with this, you know, and ruin, you know, ruin or backslide on all the stuff that we've built up to this point. So, you know, I think that there's always going to be esports. There's going to be ups. There's going to be downs. I mean, you always hear that term esports winner being thrown around, you know, like candy. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as the competition is still there, as long as there's the kids that want to compete in a video game, esports is there. And how that's going to look next year or 5 years from now, it may be completely different, but it's still going to be there. Right.
Yeah. And it doesn't really matter what the game is, as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's just the notion of competing in a video game.
Exactly.
Like, that is, you know, obviously we've kind of grown up on the same timeline that it's like, yeah, like that's, there's not a thing you're growing up. Like, no one was telling you how, you know, Friday nights, Saturday nights, we were playing StarCraft and StarCraft II in my basement, right? That mm-hmm. wasn't something we were talking about on Monday, but now I wear that as my badge of honor.
Yeah, you didn't want to, what you would talk about, you talk about your with your friends at lunch, like, it's like, oh,
yeah, like, oh, you got that proto, we're going to go home in 4v4 on Protoss and Zerg.
I just can't believe you six-pulled me there, you bastard. like, Jock walks by the table. What'd you say? No, yeah. Nothing.
We don't talk about that in a lacrosse locker room.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, did you see that the Cowboys game, guys? At least we feel more comfortable talking about our nerdy stuff out in public now.
Yeah, I love it. I love that I can, like, enjoy Marvel and Star Wars and not, like, hide that badge, but, you know. Exactly. What does the future hold for you in your career?
Oh, man. You know, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, I'm still, I don't want to, I'm not going to leave esports. Like, I'm going to be involved in esports in some capacity, in some way, for as long as the industry will have me, essentially. You know, I've always been a huge proponent of the positive, things from collegiate esports. I think that there's just tremendous opportunity for growth there in that realm. How that's going to look, I don't know. You know, I think that it'll probably go through many iterations before it finally settles on something that's going to be the ultimate thing. But at the end of the day, like, I love competition. I've always loved competition. And I want to see esports be as successful as it can be. And I want to see it get the kind of mainstream, acceptance that it has damn near everywhere else in the world, except for North America at this point.
Right. So definitely kind of bring this towards the end. You know, how big do you think collegiate esports can get? You know, like, what's the future there?
Oof. I mean, I am an eternal optimist. Right. And I will acknowledge that, you know, I'm sure I will have, you know, dozens of people just kind of like, oh, man, this guy's crazy. Like, it's never going to get the. I am always going to be the person that thinks the positive thing. And you're never going to be able to take that away from me. Like, I think that this can get as big as anything else, you know, any other form of entertainment, any other sport. You know, I think that we've already seen it grow exponentially from what it was even just you know, 5 years ago. It's gotten much bigger today than it was 5 years ago. It's crazy how big it's grown in 10 years. You know, think where it's going to be in 10 years from now. You know, I think that, you know, I think that the opportunity is endless. We just got to figure out the best way to make it sustainable. Sustainability is the biggest thing right now. And you know, as time goes and we really hit that sustainability mark as best we can, across the industry and get best practices, and not just even in the esports industry, but in collegiate as well, and just make these things, all these programs as sustainable as possible. That's, you know, that's when we can start looking at growth, right? Like, and the NFL was not born a $1 billion industry, right? It was something that had to grow into that. And you know, that was AFL, NFL merger had right. to happen.
NBA, ABA.
ABA, NBA, like, you know, everything. Major League Baseball wasn't, you
the
know,
NL
bringing
and
in.
The AL were like different leagues.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, I think, you know, we've got a lot of growing pains left to go through. We can't get impatient. And we can't do the typical thing of that gamers always do, where if a game is super exciting on release and it has a million players, and then like a month later is down to, you know, 300,000, down to a normal level, everybody's oh it's dead, it's ruined. Like, you know, PUBG has been declared a dead game for like 5 years now, and we're still chugging along just fine. So, you know, it's constantly still the number 4, number 5 spot on Steam as far as most played games. You know, it's like fashionable to be the first person to stick the knife into Caesar's back, but you know, it's not helping anybody at the end of the day, really.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's try to end each episode with my 3 questions. So what's your favorite game to watch?
My favorite game to watch is PUBG. I love PUBG. Although since taking over this role, I've really started to get more into, I enjoyed watching Valorant before because I got a lot of really good friends that are casters for Valorant. So I'd watch for them, learning more about Valorant. And then I've really started getting to like Rocket League.
Rocket League's cool.
Rocket, like, I always thought, like, even from the initial release, I thought that Rocket League was going to be an amazing esport because it's so simple to understand. The barrier to entry is so low. It's one of those extremely easy to pick up and play, very, very hard to master type of games that you know, so many people are interested in. But just the fact that it's so easy to watch, it's so easy to understand from that point. I've been really enjoying watching Rocket League lately.
So what's your favorite game to play?
Oh man, right now we've been hell diving. We have been hell diving, and they have gotten some patches in, and some crazy stuff was happening last night. I don't even know. It's gotten a lot more difficult to play all of a sudden. But yeah, I'm a switch it up guy. I'm a variety game player. I'll still always end up going back to like League of Legends, ARAMs in particular, because I don't like to get too sweaty and salty. I don't like to make myself mad when I'm playing. But I'll play like the casual modes. But yeah, that's, I try to switch it up a lot and make sure I'm keeping on top of what's new.
So what's your favorite video game character?
Oh, my favorite game character from any video game all time.
Yep.
Oh man, that's tough. I'm going to go with Mr. Torg from the Borderlands series. The muscle guy, the Randy Macho Man, Randy Savage guy. He's probably my favorite character in any game series of all time. I love Mr. Torg, and I don't think you'll. Weirdly, I don't think you hear many people say that.
Yeah, I think everybody's that was like, my first one.
So like, like Mario,
exactly,
like Princess
Link.
Link. Like, I was never a Nintendo kid. My parents wouldn't let me have the NES, Justin.
So Sonic.
So we didn't even like my friend. So when I would go to my friend's house to play, he didn't like Sonic. So we would never play Sonic. So we played like Altered Beast and like Streets of Rage 2. Okay. That game we played so much. And, but yeah, that was always fun.
Amazing. So thank you so much for joining us. This was extremely insightful. So tell everybody where they can connect with you and also learn about what Harrisburg is working on.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to double check what my Twitter is now because I always forget what it is. But yeah, you can follow me at @Porosaurus_NA. And then Harrisburg, the Storm. We are under @HUStormEsports on Twitter. And that's where you can kind of keep up with not only what I'm doing as for the Storm, but also in my casting career. And then for the HU Storm Esports, we always announce when we're going live with the streams for each game. And we try to have a stream of each Valorant, Rocket League, and League of Legends. We try to do at least one stream per week.
Amazing. So everyone make sure to go give them a follow and, you know, learn about what the program is doing. And thanks everybody again for tuning in, and follow me on Twitter, JustinJESQ. Check Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube for all our past episodes.